Welcome to another episode of Purple Insider, and back on the show, my favorite draft analyst, Mike Renner. Man, it has been quite a time over here, Mike. You know, you're looking at the whole landscape of the league and just vibing on the draft and waiting to see how it all plays out. But it's intense over here as we are in the final days before the Minnesota Vikings draft their future franchise quarterback. Can you feel the tension through our StreamYard call here?
Oh, I felt it as soon as I logged on. I saw you crack a little diet soda there just out of necessity. You couldn't just sit there and not have a little something to aid you and ease the stress.
Oh, yeah. And Diet Dr. Pepper definitely does that. I saw Wade Phillips tweet out a 36-pack of Diet Dr. Pepper, which apparently is only sold at Costco. I'm going to have to get an account to go there and buy a 36-pack just for draft night alone. So, yeah, it's been a really interesting time, man. I mean, you and I have talked so many drafts through the years, but have never had a chance to talk about quarterbacks seriously for the Minnesota Vikings. So I have a game I want to play with you, but I also just want to ask you broadly about this quarterback class. It is my impression that almost any one of the quarterbacks the Vikings end up with here is going to be a good result for them because of what they can do for that quarterback. And because we're not talking ourselves into Sam Howell here or Kenny Pickett. These are accomplished quarterbacks, record setters, guys who competed for Heisman's, generational talents. Like, there's good quarterbacks all over this board. That is my feeling, but maybe I'm just talking myself into that because it's an exciting time for the Vikings to be drafting a quarterback. So am I wrong about that?
You're not wrong. There's, you know, compared to, like I said, that Sam Howell class, it's 2022. There is a path that I see far more for even the guys I don't like in this class. And you know, I'm not a massive fan of J.J. McCarthy. I've let that be known. I'm not like super high on even like a Michael Penix, but like I think he can start in the NFL. And even he's closer to starting than anyone was in that year's class, that 2022 class. So, yeah, it's unique in that regard. But obviously, it's the NFL draft. And it's quarterback position especially. There's no sure things. Not even close.
I, of course, you know, have been over that through the years from time to time of going back through all of NFL history and laughing at quarterbacks in the 70s being drafted wrong and quarterbacks in the 2020s being drafted wrong. So that will always be the case. And you're, I'm sure, speaking to an extremely nervous fan base here as people have planted flags of what they do or don't want to see. When I went over Peter Schrager's mock the other day and he had Bo Nix going to the Vikings, the comments were angry. But the best I could say is we're going to have to just wait to see how it plays out, which is why I'm going to be fine with whoever they pick. But that's not the game we're going to play. The game we're going to play, I actually already went there, is am I wrong? So you're telling me that I'm not wrong, that the draft class is good overall, and even your least favorite prospect could be a starter. Am I wrong to be the most afraid, you hinted at this, of J.J. McCarthy in a big trade up? That is the one outcome that I think is both likely and the most scary from my perspective for the Vikings.
You're not wrong whatsoever. We've never seen him handle the kind of workload that, you know, Kirk Cousins was last year in terms of drop back passing offense. It was, and now I will say this, as much as like he didn't pass a ton, there's very little fat on his tape in terms of gimmicky RPOs, pop passes, screens. Like every passing attempt had some semblance of NFL translatability for the most part on his Michigan tape. So you have that at least in his back pocket, but there's, you know, there was so few times where he had to go get it done and then got it done over the course of his career, had to bring them back from a hole just himself. And I worry about two big things with him. Besides even that, like two big things, like an actual on the football field. One is that the man only throws lasers. The touch that he, like, far and away compared to anyone else in this class, he struggles with touch throws. He doesn't even like attempt touch throws. And two, he missed more DBs than anyone else, like just like missed in the course of his progression and threw it into guys' chests on a per drop back basis than any of these other quarterbacks. And so a lot of his like learning is going to happen right away. And so you said it's like it's the best situation probably of any of these situations that you can drop one of these rookie quarterbacks into. that doesn't mean that anyone can succeed in the Minnesota Vikings offense, right? And we obviously saw that last year. So there's a lot to be worried about in that regard, but his personality is why people are as sold on him as they are. And obviously I haven't gotten to spend time with him. I don't get to see him on a whiteboard. I don't get to know those things about how he can be as a leader for your franchise, but that's why, you know, that's if you feel like you're taking crazy pills about the JJ McCarthy thing, that's why.
Well, and so something that Kevin O'Connell talked about extensively in his press conference this week is how much they are focused on fit. And you can certainly look at the fit between the two people, at Kevin O'Connell, a complete quarterback nut, and JJ McCarthy, football guy, and how McCarthy's personality, his obsession with the game and all that stuff kind of reminds you a little bit of Kirk Cousins and his mentality. And we saw Cousins and O'Connell build this relationship over 2 years. That relationship probably supersedes any particular talent. Throwing to the right places with Justin Jefferson and Jordan Addison probably supersedes any particular talent. So maybe you're talking about taking some of Kirk Cousins' mentality, putting it to a more physically skilled but also flawed body. But that is a point that almost never gets brought up about McCarthy, is that using the data, you're formerly of PFF, more turnover worthy plays than a lot of these other quarterbacks. Like Bo Nix did not turn the ball over very often. Even as crazy as Michael Penix was throwing the ball down the field, didn't have a lot of turnover worthy plays. And we think of Drake May as being this out of control psychopath out there. Turnover worthy play rate was lower, or just as good. And so I look at it like that part of it. How much can you learn? How much can you project is really what it would have to come down to. And would I project it with the 11th pick? Sure. Would I project it with 11, 23 and the next first round pick? That's where it gets a little more dicey for me.
100%. And that's why I'm like, yeah, I'd take him if I'm back into the first round and I'm desperately quarterback needy, you know, I have my quarterbacks retiring or whatever it is at that point in the draft. Yeah, I would take that chance on the guy, but there's levels to the investment, because you take him with all that you're going to give up. That's it. You know, that's, if you're Tuatha Dé Mensa, that's your tenure. You're out the building, because you're the next 4 or 5 years, the next 4 years of the franchise are going to be tough if that guy's not the guy, or even like that guy could like just like crash and burn potential in terms of like, could he not handle it? Could it be like look awful right out the gate? I would worry about that with him more so than any of those other top three guys that are getting rumored in that point of the draft.
Okay, I've got lots more am I wrongs, but do you have any am I wrongs for me? You want to throw one at me?
Am I wrong that the Packers are the class of the NFC North going forward?
There it is. Just a reminder of Mike Renner's roots here. Are you wrong about the Packers? Yes and no. Because one thing that's hard to figure out is how good the next defensive coordinator is going to be. Because I know how bad the last defensive coordinator was. And that was something that you could always sort of count on is that the Packers are going to be limited to some extent with their talent. If they take a big step forward on the defensive side, one thing that I got really sold on was the relationship between Jordan Love and Matt LaFleur. Because of course, Vikings fans are in denial. I get emails about it. I get YouTube comments about it all the time. Stop saying Jordan Love's going to be great. And it's not just about Jordan Love. It's also about the whole landscape. I mean, you think that you have an advantage with Kevin O'Connell. That's the advantage they have too with Matt LaFleur. And then when you're talking about their receiving core, there's not a Devontae Adams there now. So we go, well, you know, they don't have a superstar, but they have maybe 3-4 guys who can really play pretty well in that system. I think that that's probably right, but I don't see a reason why Detroit would fall off. And within 2 years, it's very possible that Chicago is what the Buffalo Bills became over the last 4 or 5 years with Josh Allen. So I'm going to say you're wrong-ish, because I don't see why Detroit would get so much worse when they're bringing everything back, including a quarterback who's been proven over a number of years. But also, if you're making that argument, I can't say, oh man, you're crazy, you're out of your mind, because if Jordan Love does that for a full season, it's a huge problem for everybody.
Yeah, I will say the NFC North is, depending on obviously who the Vikings pick quarterback, to get Drake May, it was going to be a dogfight. That division, I would almost rather be anyone but Detroit than at that point, because I think the quarterbacks outside of Jared Goff are going to be better than, you know, outside of Detroit.
So that's kind of a 3 years versus 1 year. If you're just talking about next year, that's a neck and neck race between the Packers and the Lions. If you're talking about 3 years, I would probably put Chicago first and then neck and neck with the Vikings and Packers, depending on how it goes. But this is kind of an am I wrong thing. Am I wrong that the Vikings need to go over the top for Drake May? Because with an okay physically skilled quarterback, or even just above average, you're probably not getting there with the opponents that you're going to have to face. You probably need someone who's a little more on the freakish side.
Yeah, I do not think you're wrong about that. He's not only like supremely physically talented, but I think the fit for that offense is perfect in that he hits zone windows better than anyone else. You know, like he knows where to place the football so that it's getting between two guys leverage and not getting his wide receiver killed. He's not throwing routes how they're drawn up on paper, where since he's running the corner, I got to put him out to the corner. No, he'll stop a guy in his tracks and put it back on his back shoulder, which was like Kirk Cousins was the master of that. That's how he operated that offense to such a high degree. And you see Drake May do that and just, like you said, limit turnover worthy plays while still being insanely aggressive with the football. You know, he was a downfield passer, average depth of target, well over, you know, 10 yards this past year, I believe, and not actually putting the ball in harm's way. So he takes good chances with that. And as much as his accuracy is getting holes poked in it, and I do think it's an issue, it's kind of, it's something that I think can improve as his footwork improves. Like, it's, to me, is more often than not an issue of him drifting in pockets and not being from a set base. And that's something that you can drill. You can get better at. You're never going to look like, I don't think he'll ever look like Tom Brady from a footwork perspective in terms of how consistent his feet are, but he can at least get to a point where it's not hampering his accuracy. And so, yeah, I don't get the anyone else but Drake May at QB2 at this point. I do not see it with any of these guys. And I think it's a pretty big gap. And so if the Vikings got Drake May on draft day, I will not be happy. I will be upset.
Well, so where does Jaden Daniels fit into this for you? Because I was watching back Jaden Daniels' best game he ever played against Florida. But, you know, I did think that, well, there are reasons to pick apart the arm strength, which does worry you at times that the ball doesn't have that extra juice behind it like it does when J.J. McCarthy steps in and throws the fastball, or when Drake May just does anything. But, I mean, we are talking about somebody so explosive that he, I think, can run away from NFL players, which is very, very rare. The only person I've ever seen move like this at that type of speed is Michael Vick, where everybody else looks like they're in slow motion in college. And I don't know if I love the fit for a rhythm and timing offense, but also this would be your job if you're Kevin O'Connell to make this work with Jaden Daniels. And also, it's not like you passed the ball badly. The guy threw for 40 touchdowns and averaged over 10 yards an attempt. I mean, a lot of people have had good receivers and not put up numbers like that. So I don't think it would be a bad thing for Jaden Daniels to become a Viking. The question is it a good enough fit to trade everything for? Like, that's the big debate for all of these guys, is what's really the price?
Yeah, it becomes a completely different offense if you draft Jaden Daniels. And like, even schematically, you're doing vastly different things. You're not working the middle of the field nearly as much as they did last year. You're going pure vertical way more, because that's where he's like really shines, is deep posts, go balls on the outsides, ball placement on those. I mean, it looks like, I don't think the comp's great to Russell Wilson, but that's what the offense, when Russell Wilson is at his best, that's the routes that Jaden Daniels wants to target too. And then, oh, by the way, he runs like a mid 4.3s, you know, like, oh, by the way, you can absolutely fly. So there's that aspect that you would just have to add. And truthfully, he added some with Josh Dobbs at the middle of the season last year and added some quarterback running to the mix, but it was midseason. So you'd obviously had a full off season to prepare, but it would have to really incorporate that to really draw more guys into the box to then deal to attack deep. So it's just different. You know, when you're an offensive mind, you're an offensive mind. You don't limit yourself to my offense, but again, if it's so different that you're going, like, everyone else is going to have to change their strengths and weaknesses. And and you've drafted exactly for kind of what this offense looks like. Those guys are perfect for it right now. So it would be probably too different, to my opinion, mortgage the farm.
I've been on such a journey with Jaden Daniels that early on, I thought, oh, this is perfect. I'm liking this because, I mean, I've always been a fan of running quarterbacks. I think that it adds dynamics that are hard to put on paper. And you mentioned the running game. Lamar Jackson's running game, no matter who is in the backfield, is awesome. And I have to think that a big part of that is him. The same with Russell Wilson. They could kind of throw anybody back there and they would average 4.5 yards a carry because there is so much attention paid to that guy. And when you watch him throw the football, I think he is pretty accurate with the ball and he can make plays while he's on the move. I don't think it's just a scramble or throw. I think he can do both and make plays out of structure. But when he does scramble, it's something you've only seen a handful of times in all of NFL history. And even with Jalen Hurts, who has his limitations as a passer, that guy could take a team to the Super Bowl in part because the extra 700 to 1,000 running yards means so much to your offense. But I tend to think, I guess, am I wrong to think that Washington's going to pick him, or is that just what everyone's making the connection and you're not buying?
I'm going to have to say I have no clue on this one. I truly do not have a clue on what Washington's going to do at number two, because there are people who, maybe I don't say I like love their quarterback evaluations, but like who are going to bat for Jaden Daniels as if he is the next guy, like as if he should be the number one pick in this draft. You know, like there are people who former NFL quarterbacks, like who are really doing it. So when that's the case, when it's that mixed, when, you know, in my eyes, I don't see it as that close at all, but when it's that mixed, you know, it only takes one team, right? I never thought Trayvon Walker was going number one to the Jags until that week of the draft when we still hadn't come out that it was going to be a Hutchinson. So all it takes is one, but I think it would, I'm not going to say it's that level of a mistake that we've kind of seen with that pick, but it's just, I don't think it's the right, I think it's Drake May pretty clearly at number two. It should be.
You know, it's kind of one of those things where we just want different. So we try to work our way into that because it's more interesting than to just say, well, number one and two are pretty set. If Washington goes with Daniels, part of it for me of putting together the puzzle pieces would be who they brought in as their backup quarterbacks, running quarterback, the fact that they moved on from Sam Howell. I don't know what that means to Drake May, but they were supposed to be pretty good buddies. So I don't know if there's something there. I'm doing my best.
Yeah,
I'm not a draft insider. This is the best I can do is just try to put it together. What do you got for me? What do you want me to tell you if you're wrong?
Ooh, am I wrong to think there's a chance that the Vikings may get outbid and end up empty handed in this quarterback class? And or maybe like not empty handed, but like have to draft one later than trading up to that top three, top four.
So we're talking outside the top four. Are you wrong?
Yeah. They don't make, they get outbid for that move up to get one of those guys, or, you know, the Pats say they want to stand pat. Arizona's like, I'm not going to trade. And then someone else moves up with the Chargers, gives them a better deal. And that's that. They're out of QB, or they're out of those top four that we've been talking about.
Arizona wants to stand on their perch because they're Cardinal. You get
there
it?
You go.
Okay. Yeah. You are not wrong, not at all wrong, because the way that they've talked about this thing, even to the most recent press conference, is this is as much a do we love you decision about the quarterbacks as it is an economics decision. And I have to put my hand over my mouth in these press conferences when they're like, well, you know, there's other teams too. It's like, you could have been ahead of them if you had not won some Josh Dobbs games, but, you know, the past is the past. The position they're in, even with the 23rd pick, does not guarantee you a thing. There's another team, the New York Giants, that may want to draft a quarterback that can put together, at least by every draft chart, something just as valuable as the Vikings using number 23 and number 11. And I still am very hesitant on that idea of throwing in an extra first. If they did it, I would say, all right, well, that means Kevin O'Connell's all in. So I guess I'm all in and we'll give it an A and we'll see how it all works out. But it would just be a lot and it would be risky to me. They might decide it's not worth that extra first round pick to move up to try to get JJ McCarthy. We also don't know how Kevin O'Connell views Penix and Bo Nix, because last year, everybody and their brother thought that Kevin O'Connell was going to love Will Levis. It was exactly the opposite. And they proved it with their draft pick, where when that he was on the board and they said, nope, we are not doing that. We're going with a wide receiver and waiting till next year's class. I mean, Penix and Bo Nix were two guys that were thought of coming into this year as potential high draft picks. So when they talk about, oh yeah, this decision is 2 years in the making, well, does that point you toward Penix? Does it point you toward Nix? They spent a lot of time with Michael Penix, who, I mean, you talk about somebody who could stand back there and just sling it all over the yard. How about this? Am I wrong to say I don't think that's a bad outcome if they end up with Penix or Nix, though I know that Vikings fans, a lot of them will be very hesitant on this.
I don't think it's a bad outcome because you see with what's going on in San Francisco that you just need any semblance of quarterback play with when you have talent and when it's cheap. And if it's just stand pat at pick 11 or it's at pick 23 that you're picking one of those guys, they will be cheap. You know, it's not the, it decreases pretty starkly from if they're trading up to three, how much they're going to have to pay that guy versus stand and pat at 11, how much they're going to have to pay that guy. That just allows you to build so much more around them. So I don't think it's a bad outcome at all, because I think those guys are, via their experience, more NFL ready than like a JJ McCarthy. You know, you tell me those guys are starting as rookies and, you know, maybe they're not winning a ton of games, but with the Vikings, it'd be a great situation for them to do so. I think they could put up better numbers than a JJ McCarthy if he ends up in, say, New York with the Giants. Like that, I think that's not out of the question whatsoever. So I don't think it's a bad outcome at all. I'm fairly high on those guys. I had Penix and McCarthy in a similar tier on my board. And I actually have Nix ahead of Jaden Daniels. I think he's a guy who can be a quality starter in the NFL. Maybe never reached tier one or tier two as a starter, but a guy who, you know, has a pretty big chip on his shoulder after everything that's gone down in Auburn, after the way he gets talked about in the general public about his prospect profile. So I don't think that's a bad outcome whatsoever.
Folks, we all have smartphones and we know that they are pretty amazing, but they can also be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. So US Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for five. That's right, a company that sells phones wants us to put down our phones and see what we can find. Learn more at uscellular.com/builtforus. That's uscellular.com/builtforus. This is so interesting to me because you could compare it to the ink blot test with quarterbacks all the time with people. You hold up a quarterback and you go, what do you see here? Because so I was watching Bo Nix back, because sometimes we talk about them so much and I go, I need a refresh. I need to go just watch a game. So I just YouTube Bo Nix. Let me just watch a game. And I was watching him against Oregon State, who I thought was a pretty decent defense. All right, let's see him. You know, I think it was in Corvallis. It's always tough to go to Corvallis. So let's see how he performed in that game. And yes, there were a lot of screen passes, and I fast-forwarded past the screen passes. But there, you talk about touch on the football. You talk about making some plays out of structure. He had one that, yes, in the NFL, maybe it would be picked off, where he threw across his body and found a guy downfield, but keeping your eyes up, looking to make a play. And every time I go back and watch a guy, I go, oh yeah, you know, I could see that. I could see that. And yet with Bo Nix, people have sort of fallen off the train completely with him, as if he shouldn't even be talked about in this discussion. What happened from point A to point B, aside from 45 touchdowns, to make people not like Bo Nix?
He didn't have a great Senior Bowl. You know, he didn't go down there and light the world on fire. It's a difficult situation to look great, though, I will say, when you're with brand new people an offense you don't know. So that could have been it. I don't know, though, because like you said, you flip on a game with Bo Nix, he doesn't put the ball in harm's way. Yeah, there's a lot of fluff you got to fast forward through that's going to be meaningless when you get to the NFL. But even when he is attacking down the football field, he's throwing with anticipation, probably better than anyone else in this draft class, truly, in terms of like how far before breaks he's willing to let it rip. And he just, he threw like three bad, like in terms of like balls that should have been picked, like probably three that were actually bad the entire year. Like he did not make mistakes with the football. Everyone remembers Auburn Bo Nix, but he turned into a completely different guy by the end of his football career. So the age too, 24, you know, same amount of years as Jaden Daniels, but a full year older than or almost full year older, 10 months older than Jaden Daniels. So that the sticker shock of that, it's obviously not great, but that's what Joe Burrow was coming in the NFL. It's not really that big a deal. Quarterback's a different animal altogether, it seems like, from a performance perspective than other positions with age and how it relates to it. So I don't know. I've asked a bunch of people the same question, and everyone's just like, yeah, I kind of, he's okay. It's like, I think he could be better than okay, because the stats and what he did at Oregon this past year was definitely better than okay.
There's a listener of mine who loves data, who was trying to look into what stats correlate most to success. And of course, the correlation is pretty low with everything, but college quarterback rating came out the highest. And that's Bo Nix, man. I mean, what, it's just sometimes you just, I don't know. It scrambles my brain a bit, because when Joe Burrow was doing what he was doing, he did all the same stuff. He put up insane numbers. He had great receivers around him. He had a great offensive, system around him. He made some plays, but was not the next Josh Allen out there in any capacity. And he goes into a great situation and succeeds. Maybe that's too easy of a comparison, but you could see it. And there was one throw in particular that I really liked. And, you know, talking about hundreds of throws, but where he had to layer the ball over a linebacker to his receiver. It was in front of a safety behind a linebacker. And he put the exact right amount of touch on the football. And was it perfectly like right here? Not exactly, but the touch on it was really nice. The arc on it was really nice. And it just showed kind of a feel for the game. So this is a guy that you could see Kevin O'Connell saying, well, it's not like Kirk Cousins had the best arm of all time, but getting it out, getting it to the right place, having some scramble ability, all this kind of does point you to kind of a Bo Nix, which maybe he'll be picked in the third round. I have no idea, but right. I mean, that's just the range of outcomes with him. But at 11, is that okay with you with Bo Nix, or would you want to wait till later?
That's okay with me, honestly. I think he's that good. Now, I may be out on a limb with that, but I said I have him over Jaden Daniels. So I take Jaden Daniels somewhere in the top 10. I take Bo Nix somewhere in the top 10.
That is, I don't have to ask you at the end, what's your hottest take in draft season? Because that's it.
Yeah.
Am I wrong for putting myself in the New England Patriots shoes and saying our roster is garbage and we could use all of these draft picks? Is that, am I wrong for thinking that it is realistic that the Patriots could say, let's play it out for a year under Gerard Mayo. He's going to be our coach for a long time. We are not going to set up Jaden Daniels or Drake May to succeed here. There's a quarterback next year that everybody's really into that maybe we could be in position for. So let's ride it out, trade with the Vikings, get as much draft capital as we can, and rebuild. Am I wrong for thinking that's a realistic scenario?
I don't think you're wrong at all. And truthfully, you know, if Drake May does go too, I'm not picking any of these quarterbacks at three if I'm the Patriots. You burn their entire rookie contract because your roster is too far away. You are at least 3 years away. More realistically, probably 4 years away, because you don't have a single rookie contract guy that's worth a darn right now. You know, like truly, like there's not cheap talent on this roster that's going to move the needle for you from a roster building perspective. So if you do put a good situation around them, if you just stand pat at three and put a good situation around this guy, it's purely via free agency. And at that point, it's like you've kind of wasted the whole boat. And there's a high, high, high chance that should this guy not hit the ground running, which a lot of, you know, the history will show, the vast majority of quarterbacks don't, especially when they go into that situation, they don't hit the ground running, you're drafting number one overall next year. Like, that's how bad this roster is. You're drafting number one overall. And for say what you want about Bill Belichick, he's still probably got more out of that roster than Gerard Mayo will out of that roster to still be drafting number three. So arrows pointing to another number one overall pick for you, even if you do draft a quarterback. And then you're in the Titans situation where, sure, maybe you get a haul for it next year, but I would rather than start a rookie clock kind of the next year to start, and have the pieces around him to begin with to give him that situation, because you risk just ruin that guy's confidence. So in my opinion, there's very few scenarios where I'm actually drafting a quarterback in this class on the Patriots if I get, you know, what the Vikings seemingly are willing to offer here.
Yeah, I keep coming back to that, you know, they should have a long-term vision, because the short-term just ruined Mac Jones. And I don't ever think Mac Jones was going to be a megastar, but I also think if he went to San Francisco, we saw enough of a sample in his first year to believe that in the right situation, he could have been successful. And what a different history it would be in the NFL if all those draft reporters were right and he went to San Francisco instead of Trey Lance. We would have never found out about Brock Purdy, probably. What else you got for me?
Ooh.
I like how you suffer from this every time I ask. Like,
I was going to say, I don't want
to. You have to be bubbling over with takes here. I mean,
I don't want to think too much more about the Minnesota Vikings. So
anything. Go anything.
Gosh, I'm trying to think of anything here. Am I wrong to think that like Caleb Williams may not be the second coming? Like he's absurdly talented, but there's a path to him being, I'm trying to think of a quarterback that he could be. Maybe like a Russell Wilson tier or like, you know, that everyone's putting him in this, like he's going to be tier one, that he just may end up being solid at the next level and not the savior for the Bears.
So I'm glad you said this because I'm going to make a little connection to now a women's basketball story that everyone knows in Caitlin Clark. So Caitlin Clark is a wonderful WNBA prospect, a tremendous, tremendous player, but having watched the game for a very long time, and I'm kind of like you of the WNBA draft. I do it for fun. But I've been making WNBA.
Well, I'm doing it for fun now. So.
Oh, that's true. That's true. That won't be for long though. But I've been making WNBA draft boards for a long time. I just only share them with my wife and friends who like women's basketball. But so I've seen some of the greatest players of all time as prospects. When I watch Caitlin Clark, I go, yeah, I mean, I see it. I don't think I see the best prospect of all time, but the hype around it is, oh man, this is the best player who has ever stepped on a basketball court. I feel the same way about Caleb Williams, where I have watched a ton of Caleb Williams over the last couple of years. And I go, I mean, I see the magical throws. I see the physical skill set. I also see some things that I really don't like projecting to the next level that could keep him from greatness. And one of those was at the end of the Washington game, the dude just gave up playing football at the end of that game. And I know life was hard last year at USC. It was not easy. You and I were playing strong safety for them. It was bad. But you also don't see Patrick Mahomes, Philip Rivers, Eli Manning, like great winning quarterbacks. You don't see them usually kind of just melt a little bit when things got really hard. And I thought that was the case for him. I also think if you fumble 700 times in a row, that's a tendency. Fumbling is a tendency. It was for Jameis Winston and it was for Sam Darnold. And nobody ever talked about it in college. It was like, oh, they're just generational. Don't worry about it. There's that. And I think that he will be super exciting and could be really, really good when he's on, but then very frustrating when he's not. So I like that take. I don't think that I look at him and go, oh yeah, that's Andrew Luck.
Jameis isn't like a bad comparison in terms of like what he could end up being at the next level, which is just like a lot of fun, a lot of up, but also there could be a lot of down to his game that I worry about. Now, obviously I think he's going to a solid situation, a unique situation where it is, but his floor just seems lower than I think people are letting on. And like, there's no super high floor prospect in this class, right? It's not, it's just, I would rather like comparing him to guys like Burrow, Lawrence, those guys were higher floor in my opinion. You just like saw the consistency already and like the kind of what needs to look like at the NFL level. You had that at collegiate level already. Williams just a little farther away in my opinion.
Let me go a little in the same direction of off from the Vikings just a tad here, but a matter of interest for Vikings fans is Aaron Rodgers and what he's going to look like with the New York Jets. So the Jets are probably going to draft Brock Bowers or something in this draft to try to get a weapon for him. I don't think at any point, tell me I'm wrong, that Aaron Rodgers and the New York Jets will be a relevant NFL team for next year. I just don't see it. My former intern, Haley English, who also interned at PFF, earmuffs for her because she's a Jets fan and she's waited forever. But I think that he's just washed and it's going to be Russell Wilson in Denver type of thing, no matter who they draft.
I think you're wrong there though.
Okay.
Maybe not in terms of like wash. He may not look close to what he may look like Brett Favre 2010 Vikings, right? It could be just like, oh man, that was, he's time to go, you know, time to hang it up sort of thing. But it's hard to understate how much better that still is than Zach Wilson, right? Like that's still insanely better than Zach Wilson. And so this is a team that went 7-10, you know, same record as the Vikings with that at quarterback because the defense is just unreal. It is unbelievable defense. No reason to think they'd take a step back from last year. So yeah, he may not be Aaron Rodgers of old, but it's not going to take much for this team to be much, much better. And I think like Bills are worse. Pats still stink. Dolphins are worse. They should have a good chance of at least making the playoffs here. So
See, I guess where I'm going with this, and I know that losing Diggs is a huge deal, and they're going to bring in a rookie receiver for sure in Buffalo, but their quarterback, and I also think their coach on the defensive side, Sean McDermott, is an excellent defensive coach who raises the level. His motivational tactics, questionable at times, but his defensive ability, still quite good. And so I'm not going to knock them down too much farther. And with Miami, you know, it's gonna mostly the same, right? Same weapons. Maybe they could improve on the defensive side a bit. So I just think that the Jets are going to have a hard time here. And also, we've seen this happen so many times. You mentioned Favre 2010, where you just talk yourself into, no, he's still got it. He's still got it. This is an old man who is maybe 30 pounds lighter than he was at his peak with an Achilles injury. We're talking about Kirk and his Achilles and whether he's coming back. Kirk's like 5 years younger than this man. I just have a tough time with it. And I think they did get a great defensive performance last year, which does not guarantee they'll have another one this year. Just saying.
I'm not picking them to win a Super Bowl by any means. I had them as my Super Bowl pick last year. That ain't going to be the case this year, I'll just say.
All right, how about this? I'm curious about your favorite defensive players in the first round, because we went through the tell me I'm wrong. If they picked Bo Nix at 11, it would be fine, and you're good with that, which would mean you'd have the 23rd overall pick. I don't see them waiting to 23 for a quarterback, because that is just too risky. And if they all go off the board and you're stuck with that guy from Tulane, that's not a great outcome, I think. So I'm sure he was wonderful at the Senior Bowl. I'm sorry. I know I have a listener who's from Tulane. I apologize, man. I know. I just hurt his feelings. But don't do that. So if they stuck at 23, though, I was making a list the other day of guys that I think might be a good fit, and there seems to be a lot who could be available at 23. Who would be your favorite defensive players for the Vikings in the back end of the first?
There's two guys that I think you're hoping fall to them at 23, should they not obviously use that pick. But one is Laiatu Latu, the UCLA defensive end. I think he's just an awesome, awesome pass rusher. I think he's the most skilled pass rusher in this draft, and truthfully, like, he's right up there with the Bosa's in terms of just skilled pass rushers coming out of college football in recent memory. So that's a dream scenario. And then when I go back to for them, and obviously like a lot of people have the mocks them trading up, but still could be there at 23, is Nate Wiggins, the Clemson corner. Mm-hmm. He's just an awesome man cover corner. Like, they don't have a pure guy who can go one-on-one. And if you have that in Brian Flores' defense, he'll let him do that, right? He will do the stuff around to make his, it'll just send his defense to another level and what they can do outside of that guy. But they quite frankly didn't have that last year with him. So I think that Wiggins, like, everyone talks about his tackling, but again, Flores would not ask him to tackle. He would ask him to go man up their best wide receiver. And I think Wiggins is the kind of athlete that can do that. Obviously, when you run sub 4.3, you can at least stick with him down the football field. But I saw him just do some special things in terms of being able to react back downhill on hitches and those sort of routes that usually your pure speed guys can struggle with. So I think Wiggins is your dream fit at corner if you're the Minnesota Vikings in this class.
The other guys that I have my eye on are the defensive tackles. It's just a cheat code. There's so few teams with great defensive tackles. I was trying to think of how many defensive tackles in the league that are a difference maker on a weekly basis. If you can get one, then you have something really special with your defense. And I don't know. I mean, do we think that Murphy and Newton are those guys?
I think Murphy for sure is. I think Newton's close to that. I wish he was a little bit more athletic because he's slightly undersized. But I think he's super skilled though for a DT. But my hot take is, not even hot take, they go higher than people imagine. Mm-hmm. Because that position, DT in this year's class, there's the largest gap between tier one and tier two. It goes from those two guys, who I think probably end up both top 21 picks, to probably a guy I'm not drafting until the end of the second round. It's just a massive chasm to where if you need one, if you're like the Bengals, who could really want one, the Seahawks, who could really want one, I don't see how you pass up early on because there's just not another dude there on the board for you until, you know, third round. And those third round guys are like placeholders a lot of times. You know, not a lot of impact third round DTs coming out. So I think those DTs go higher than people think just because the scarcity of the position.
does feel like that would be a stick at 11, take Murphy type of thing, which again, just seems too risky for me, unless the Vikings had some plan to trade back up. But then you're talking about Denver picking, talking about the Raiders picking, and you're potentially letting Penix and Nix go to those guys. That one has always seemed a little bit of a stretch for me. Before we wrap up, I want to know this from you. You've done the draft for a long time. I know this because you're in my book, and I wrote about how you, even as a kid, were making draft boards and trying to pick which guys the Packers were going to take in the draft. So you've been thinking about the draft for a long time. I want you to give me your favorite guy at quarterback that you crushed, that you nailed, and you're so proud of. You nailed the evaluation, you loved him, and then he turned out to be a star. And the one that crushed you the most, the one you were like, no, this guy's not any good and he's going to stink, and then he turned out to be great. Give me your favorites.
Ooh,
I'm sure there's many over the years when you try to study this, as long as you have.
I will say in 2017, so that was Mahomes, Deshaun Watson. That year I was like, just passing this class. I didn't think that class was like worth it, which made sense with Trubisky. I hit on Trubisky saying that. Did not obviously hit on Patrick Mahomes and Deshaun Watson. I'm trying to think of a guy I called who I really liked coming out. And then he ended up exceeding expectations. I loved Russell Wilson coming out. Now, I wasn't a draft analyst back then, but I just remember him because I was a big Wisconsin fan. And I remember him at Wisconsin just being like, this guy's different than, like, he doesn't miss. Like, he never missed throws. And Wisconsin, I knew some shoddy QBs throughout the early 2000s growing up. And I was just like, this guy's different. Couldn't believe when they were like, you know, he fell to the third round. Not to say, you know, I had any chops as an evaluator back then. That was the one guy where I was just like, man, I think he starts over Matt Flynn. Like year one, I'm like, I think he starts over Matt Flynn. Lo and behold, that ended up happening. So that was one where I was like, that was obviously before, I think it was like the first year, I guess that was 2012 draft. That was right when I was starting at PFF. So semi-called that one, I'll say. Can't give myself too much credit.
Going back to childhood, I remember thinking this T. Martin guy is going to be even better than Peyton Manning because you know, you don't even know how scouting works or anything, but he won the national championship. And I think he was throwing to Peerless Price and everything. And then you go, oh man, he's going to be this dynamic. So when I got Madden, I played with T. Martin, put him in, and it just, you know, never really became a thing. The worst and the best one came in back-to-back classes for me. The best is actually Patrick Mahomes. I was obsessed with Patrick Mahomes, loved watching him play. Yep.
That's all you need.
There's a tweet. There's a tweet that's proof. Every once in a while I retweet it just to make fun of the draft analysts who retweet their old takes. But the next year was Josh Allen and Josh Rosen, just totally wrong on both of them. Would have taken Josh Rosen way over Josh Allen and would have been a complete dope. So that's quarterback life.
Yes, it is. If you're batting, gosh, what do you even need to bat to over 50%? And you're probably the best quarterback evaluator in the world.
It's probably like sports gambling. If you're at 54%, you're amazing. So last thing, what do you think happens here? What do you think the Vikings do?
I'm so sad to say this, but I think Jaden Daniels goes too. I think they get a nice big deal to go up and they get Drake May at 3. I don't want it to happen, but something in my gut says that that's going to happen.
I think so too. That's going to be my final prediction as well. And, Drake May, Caleb Williams, Jared Goff, and Jordan Love in the same division will be really something to witness, I think.
Yeah.
So, Mike Renner, you're the best. If I was handed a team and started a scouting department, you would be one of my first picks to join that department. You're one of my favorite evaluators of the draft ever, and I appreciate you taking the time. I'm glad we could get together before the draft, man. Thanks for doing this.
For sure, Matthew. Thanks for having me, brother.
Football.